depend on him, his own influence upon the Prophet, Hashem's own influence on the Prophet, Higbar or Lov Hibodes Godo, Umiyod Chomre Bechol, every group of Yizdazu, the Kashmiri Zabek. Then at that moment, there is a great strength, and immediately his physical self and all parts of his physical body tremble, and the chashmul is apeh, and they appear the his apeh, that to disappear completely, because that is part of the nature of the physical, that it cannot possibly tolerate the revelation of the spiritual. The purely physical cannot carry the purely spiritual. And so the physical gives way entirely to the purely physical, to the purely spiritual. How much more so where there is the actual revelation of the glory of Hashem himself. And therefore all his feelings are as if come to know, but and all his physical ability ceases to be active. But they all remain literally hanging until Hashem gives him this influence directly from him. The name Mitzada is Gavkushen Ishmose Mishabekes, he tells a boy with Tius as scholar, Kutz Migedu Kola scholar in Eshi the Gavki. And now because of this closeness that his soul has with Hashem, there increases in him the actual, the essence of enlightenment. This is completely different from any kind of human enlightenment that we know. That is, we also have, as he explained before, we also have spurts of enlightenment. There are times when we can see something that's very deep and we see it very clearly. We see it sometimes so clearly that we are unable to express it in words. We can just feel that this is so. Now what a prophet experiences is far beyond anything like that. So it is something that is really not within our realm. Now this enlightenment which he has, and the word isn't really enlightenment, it's the word that Kaplan uses in his translation, but what it means is, it is in this fundamental pure knowledge of a certain matter. There he goes right down to the roots of it, and that is what makes it so clear. For and so he gets an understanding of it much more than he would get however deeply he went into the subject himself, because this is an influence that comes from the outside. And now, that is one of the differences between the prophet and the person who's got the Ruach HaKodesh. So, in this way, the prophet is far greater than the man that's got Ruach HaKodesh. The person that's Ruach HaKodesh, it's his mind that comes to the essential of the knowledge and the wisdom. In the case of the Novi, that it is right there in the very root of it, and that can only be to Hashem that it is better. There he experiences an enlightenment which is far greater than any enlightenment that comes to a human being on his own. He has called the Bechinas against the Koshu the Berber is Boros Shemar. And it's an enlightenment that results from not only his close proximity to Hashem, but being bound up with Hashem. The Hinei Gilu is to Berber is Boros Hu Yeh Afuwe Bechol Mashi Moshe Klenobi Bilegu Osev. Now all the time that the prophet is experiencing his prophecy, there is the revelation of God's glory, and that is the activating agent in this. This has been going on for 2 days and hasn't it? Yes, that is settled. Pardon? Now the activating agent in the prophecy, now we are making a distinction from the time that the prophecy takes place and the time that the prophet reveals his prophecy to mankind. These are two separate areas, and unless you understand that, then it doesn't make sense. So he says, now while he is experiencing the prophecy, Now the activating agent in all this, when the prophet is having his prophecy, is what we call Kavodo Hashem. It's the glory of God. Glory of God is something that is in the final, but it is something that he is experiencing. We might have a little bit later in the shiur as to what is the definition of the glory of God. And then it goes in to the faculty of the imagination. And then that becomes indelibly impressed into his memory, what he is experiencing. And now he isn't functioning at all. This is coming from outside and impressing itself on the faculty of his imagination. And then it impresses on him, and he has got in his imagination, he's got clearly everything that he has seen, and then his own mind begins to work. He's back now to normal, and now his own mind takes over, but it's got all this information, it's got all this enlightenment, and now his own mind takes over. And now, what his experience remains fixed in his mind, that even when he returns now to his normal state, his experience is graphically and vividly in his mind. From the faculty of imagination, he's being projected into his mind, and now he's got it there in his mind clearly. Yes, Sima. No, he is not unconscious by any means, but he is in a completely different world. But he's not unconscious at all. He's just in a different world completely. And his normal is not functioning normal. His physical side isn't functioning at all. He says if he is spiritually divorced from the physical. It just remains there, but he's not functioning. You know, we've got something of that in sleep sometimes. If you try and run in your sleep and you can't run, you see. It's just that, but in your mind you're running. But yes, as Sophia, I think you want to ask something.
Okay, so
when
his autonomous system is still running, his heart is still beating,
yes.
And those are, is there a time frame during which this happens?
What do you mean by time? How long it lasts?
Because I can't even imagine, but I would think that the conveyance of something by Hashem to the prophet would be not that long a time frame.
Well, you see, it's absolutely irrelevant. Relative.
Yeah.
I mean, the time.
Well, what he's experiencing, what we're seeing, for instance, when we're watching.
I've told you that the longest dream is probably only a very small part of a minute,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps even a fraction of a second. And all that could take place in that time.
So that one could be watching.
So it's relative.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is relative. There are people that can take a book like the Derech Hashem, a work like the Derech Hashem, and go like this, and go through it, and they'll tell you everything that is in it. And their eyes see a page of the whole. Like when we look at it, we probably see a phrase. You don't have to look at every word to see a phrase. I mean, they just see the whole page, and they absorb it. Now, there are people that can do that. It becomes very relative. There are people that can work out a very difficult problem in a few seconds. They just see it immediately. Other people take days over it. So it's an experience that can last. To the prophet, it will seem as if it's lost hours.
But in reality,
it could have lasted only a few seconds.
That
can be. Elizabeth?
I also have the same question. I try to differentiate the Ruach from all these states of consciousness. And in this world that I live in, there are all these strange people who claim that they have, not that they have the Ruach, well, maybe they do claim they have the Ruach, but I'm starting to understand why they claim that. And that something is overwhelming, and it seems.
Yes, you know, we are very strange people here in this country. Just that we know how to deal with it. I think I told you the story of how a certain young man, he wasn't such a young man, he was a husband, but his wife had gone through a terribly difficult period, and he asked me one day to please come over and see him. In his, at his, he had a big furniture store to see in his office. I didn't want to go, and my heart told me I shouldn't go, but I was very young and he begged me and I couldn't say no. So I said I would come. And I went down to see him and he brought me in through passages, things out there, got really quite scared. Anyway, brought me into what was more a den than an office, and he sat down and he told me that God appeared to him and told him he was a prophet, and God said he was going to do this to me, and and now he is the Messiah and was a prophet, and I just listened to this. Eventually I said to him, yes, I appreciate you have to tell me about this. I said, but now I've got to go. He said, but why have you got to go? I looked at my watch and I said, I've got an appointment with my bank manager at 12 o'clock. He said, but young, I'm speaking to you. I'm a prophet of the staff of Messiah. And you think you've got to go to your bank manager? To leave me and to go to a bank manager, I had to think very quickly, otherwise I'd be finished. So I said to him, you see, this bank manager has God has spoken to him and he's told him that he's a prophet and that he's the Messiah, and that he was to discuss the whole matter with me. So I've got it. He got killed, you know. These things would say to God, but so anyway, that is just one of the experiences. Whereas, yes, sir. So you get this type of person, you get any number of it. That you mistake. As soon as he tells you he's a prophet, as soon as he tells you God appeared to him, then he's not normal, or he hasn't got any sense. Because if he had sense, I would never tell you God appeared to me. I know you wouldn't believe it, so why should I tell you? Even if it did happen, you see. So, you know, there's something wrong. That's all you can do.
Yes, if a person
hasn't
the law, you know, he's completely overwhelmed
for
whatever period that is.
Yes.
Does he know
he
has the law?
Oh, yes. That's the point he makes. He's very, very much aware of it. Oh, that is a very important thing. You know, these saucy answers when they don't know anything, when they wake up and they say, what happened? What did I say sort of business? Oh, no, he's absolutely aware of it. And the point that he makes is he remains aware of it. It's indelibly impressed, vividly and graphically on his co-academia. And that's the faculty, the pelvis. And from then it's projected into the mind and into the intellect. And he absorbs it into the intellect, and then it keeps it over. But when it's absorbed into the intellect, it's back to normal already. But that he's able to do, fully aware of it, and remains with him for the rest of his life.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Connor?
So how do we know in such detail that this is what happens when you another ghost
speaks? Well, when you're speaking about me, you include me. That's a good question. That's a good question. We're going to have another example of that in a very short time. Yes. We have another example of that in a very short time. You know, I regard myself as having been particularly blessed. Not because of anything for which I can take credit. God put me into a position where I have the most remarkable teacher. Not only my uncle, etc. And I've told you that these teachers were the disciples of the synchronism. The synchronism was the disciple of the Destroyer Solante. The Destroyer Solante was the disciple of the Zimbabwe Solante. The Zimbabwe Solante was the disciple of the Chaim Balojna. The Chaim Balojna was the disciple of the Zimbabwe God. The first generation of the Zimbabwe Hashem. Now, when you get back to the Bina Gur, when you go as far as the Bina Gur, and there's never been any break, you can trace when you can trace it back to the Rishonis. Trace it right back to the Rambam. Once you can trace it back to the Rambam, you can trace it right back to Moshe Rabbeinu. There hasn't been a break. So this is the Torah Shebal Peh that has been handed over from master to disciple. And he's got this. To a very, very rare degree. He had the most wonderful teachers. In fact, he was so young that he had this knowledge that there was a fear of him in his birthplace and in his native country. There was a fear of him that he might set himself up as a Messiah, or people would set him up as a Messiah, and he had to flee. He fled from Italy to Holland, and then from Holland he went to Israel, and in Israel he died. A very young man. But he's got it, this is straight from this. And so we've got a lot, we've got the Gorn's works, that we know that the Gorn says something, it's absolutely, we know that it's completely reliable. And then we've got the other school, we've got the Chazal, we've got the Arizal. Can't go wrong with all these things. But that is a very good question. How do we know it all? That this is the Torah of our Torah to have it out. As I said, we're going to get some more examples of the Torah. Right. So it is the glory of God, difficult phrase to understand, that is the activating agent in all this. And then it goes in the imagination, the faculty, imaginative faculty. From there it is projected into the intellect, and when it is in the intellect, he absorbs it in his own mind and in his own language, and then he is able, where he is ordered, to make it known to others, then he reveals it to others. There are things that he is not ordered to reveal to others, it's made only known to him, then he doesn't reveal it to others. Alright? This remains indelibly impressed in his mind now, and when he comes back to normality, then this person is absolutely normal. So just come along, Shira, please sit down. Now, Shira, I know that you've been very, very devotedly busy with matters that are most important to us, and the future of Torah in this community depends on what you are doing. And I want to thank you very much for what you are doing, and I know that is the reason you are late. And the shir is divided into two parts, and are divided in such a way that the second part you get in its spare time. Alright. So, Allah Kau, Madre Gosa, Veda says, Zekol Inyan Alevuel Holanabim, this is prophecy with regard to all the prophets. Ach Protea Madre Gos Rabbi, that there are various degrees in Nobi. Not every Nobi is the same. There are those who are smaller, there are those who are greater, there are those who are the greatest. Uchemoshin avoyel lefonim as Israel will still explain b'siyata d'shmaya with the help of heaven. And now, the final word of this particular chapter in answer to an observation of Simaz, ba'al ha'kul, ma'zei gosa shel Moshe Rabbeinu olam ha'sholam. And over all of these, there is the level of Moshe Rabbeinu himself. She'eidu olam ha'Torah, about whom the Torah gives evidence and testifies, v'lo kol novi ol b'Yisrael to Moshe. There never arose again a prophet in Israel like Moshe, asher yedo'o Hashem ponim el ponim, whom Hashem knew, who knew Hashem face to face. Right? So that is the end of that chapter. Now, I want to deal something else with you arising of all this, although I have not. Thank you. Can you make it a little bit closer? A little bit closer, I'm going to break it. Please. Yes. Pardon? Is this a lead pencil?
Yes.
Okay. Now, he said here that there are madrigas and madrigas of prophets. There are levels of prophecy. I want to deal with you this evening a little bit to give you some idea of what it means, levels and levels of prophecy. I'm going to speak to you about what is expected of a Torah Jew. There is a verse in the Torah, what lay your experience when she gave birth to her first son. It says in the Torah as follows. And Leah conceived, and she bore a son, Patikro Shemel Reuven, and she called him Reuven. Reuven literally means see a son. That's all it means. Now, Ki Omro, for she said, Ki Ro'o Hashem Bi Onyi, God has seen my affliction, Ki Ato Ye'er Bani Ishi. Now my husband will love me. Now we know that Yaakov wanted to marry Rachel, and Lavan, Rachel's father, arranged that he married Leah instead of Rachel. And so he married as a second wife, he married Rachel also. Rachel, for the time being, has got no children, and Leah has conceived and she has given birth to her first son. And she says that now her husband is going to love her. Why is he going to love her? Just because she bore him a son? You mustn't forget that Leah had weak eyes. That's the Torah tells us. The Torah Shebaalpeh tells us why she had weak eyes. The people used to say, she has got two cousins. She has got their two cousins, Esau and their two brothers, Esau and Yaakov. And there are two sisters, Leah and Rachel. There you've got two sons, an older and a younger one. The older one is Esau, the younger one is Rachel. Is Yaakov. Yeah, you've got two sisters. The older one is Leah, the younger one is Rachel. So they used to say that, I'm paraphrasing it, they used to say, well, after all, when Yitzchok, their father, had to find a wife, they came here. Got to find one. So obviously, for these two, their father, Yitzchok, will have to come and find wives there. It's ready made for them. There are two brothers, and there they are two sisters. So Leah, the older sister, is for Esau, the older son, and Rachel, the younger sister, is for Yaakov, the younger son. Now, it is for this reason that Leah had those eyes. She was weeping. Has she got to marry Esau? His notoriety had spread far and wide. So she wept a tremendous amount, and she had weak eyes because of that. Then she gave birth to her first son. She said, Reuven, see a son. Now this is what Rashi tells us. She said, Omro. Now this of course comes from the Torah Shebaalpeh. Rashi is not saying it on his own. Omro, Re'u ma bein b'ni lebein chami. See the difference between my son and the son of my father-in-law. The father-in-law was Yitzchak, and the son of her father-in-law to whom she refers is Esau, is Esau. She says, see the difference between my son, Reuven, to whom I've just given birth, and my father-in-law's son. Sheh mochar habechero leYaakov. My father-in-law's son sold his birthright to Yaakov. Bezeh lo mochro leYosef. My son will not have sold his birthright to Yosef. And yet, who turns out to be the firstborn amongst all Yaakov's sons, in the end, it's Yosef. It's Yosef that gets two portions in Eretz Yisrael, through Ephraim and Manasseh, through his two children. So it is Yosef that gets the birthright. So she says, Esau sold his birthright, knowingly and wittingly, to Yosef, to Yaakov, but Reuven will not have sold his birthright to Yosef. And yet it will have been taken away from him and given to Yosef. So by right, what should his relationship to Yosef? One of love or one of hatred? Humanly of hatred. So he says, the Lo Ire Rolov, he never questioned it. He said, he will never have questioned it. My son will never have questioned it. That Yosef, what right has Yosef got to the birthright? He is the firstborn. Never questioned it. Will never have questioned it. Below other than furthermore, Shalom Ire Rolov Elo Shebike Shalom Tzir Min Abo. When Yosef was thrown into the pit, he went to the pit, unbeknown to his brothers, to save Yosef and to bring him back to his father. He could have kept quiet about it and let Yosef be killed, and then he's the firstborn again. That he didn't do. He went back to the pit in order to save him. Have you got the idea? What's the obvious question, Liz? Give the answer. Nebuah. She was a Nebuah. Sora, Rivko, Rochel and Leah were Nebuahs. She knew this by Nebuah. She knew that this is going to happen. She said, that is the difference between my son and my father-in-law's son. This is the difference between my firstborn and my father-in-law's firstborn. That pleased her no end that she had such, she would have such a son. Yes, sir.
Did she, like,
This is far beyond that. So she knows that. Very great thing.
Would she be jealous of the nephew? Or her own son's soul? Or because she knew it, but it was from the son, and
she just knows that this is so, and that her son has got no anger, no enmity, no hostility, not even any resentment. But to the extent the love he's got for his brother, in spite of all this, the love that he's got for his brother, brings him, wants to go to bring him out of the pit to save him. That's what he wants to do. That was his plan all along. Put him into the pit, and afterwards he will come along and he will save him. That is Reuven. And she's so happy about it. And she says, give my husband such a son, for that he will love. Got his story. Now, is this natural or is it not natural? Now there is a law in the Torah. First of all, there is a law in the Torah. No sikko, no sikko. Have you got the superstition? I'll get it. Excuse me, I said that. Thank you. experiment. Hate, I'm giving you the English translation, it's a very good translation. Hate and revenge, too, are very difficult for man's spiteful heart to escape. For in view of his being extremely sensitive to insult and suffering great anguish because of it, revenge being the only thing which will put him at rest is sweeter than honey to him. Therefore, if it is within his power to abandon the urging of his nature and to overlook the offense so as not to hate the one who is lighted hatred within him, nor to take revenge against him when the opportunity to do so presents itself, nor to hold a grudge against him, but to forget the whole affair and remove it from his heart as if it had never occurred. If he can do this, he is strong and courageous. Such conduct is easy only for the ministering angels, among whom the aforementioned traits do not exist, not for dwellers in houses of clay in the roots or in the dust, not for us mortals. But the king has decreed, in perfectly lucid language, requiring no interpretation, do not hate your brother in your heart. Do not take revenge and do not bear a grudge against the children of your nation. That is the law in the Torah. This is funny, hasn't God? So he says, so there is the overriding, you shall love your next one as yourself. He says, it doesn't need any commentary, it doesn't need any explanation. And then he hints here, he says, you might say that this is not human, it's not natural. Of course it's not human, it's not natural. But who says that we've got to be human and natural? We are expected to be superhuman. The Torah wants much more from us than just from an ordinary human being. That is what is demanded from the Jew. It's not demanded from the Gentiles. But from the Jew, this is something that is demanded. Yes.
I thought he said, do not seek revenge against the children of your nation.
That's right.
Okay, so we're talking about what the Jew
is
required to do. I'm just wondering how specific it has to be.
We
don't have to apply that to
non-Jews. This is a specific law from a Jew to his brother. And his brother must subscribe to the same law. But this is not a demand that is made on a non-Jew, that he must not to have in his heart any revenge at all, any feeling, not even a grudge. And a grudge means, you know, they give the famous example of the difference between revenge and grudge, and it is a perfect definition. Revenge is, well, a dung at Oxford needs a bellows in the middle of winter to get his fire going. So in those days, the students at Oxford had a bathman, had a man that attended to him, made his bed, prepared his food for him. So he sends his man across to another Donny's servant, and he says, he needed a book. So he sends his man across to a fellow man to ask him to lend him that book. The man comes back and says that the other Don says he doesn't lend books out of his library. But if this Don would come over to him with the greatest of pleasure he can have, he can look at the book in his library for as long as he likes. Few months later, it's midwinter, the other Don sends to this Don and says, will you please lend me your bellows? I can't get my fire going. He says, tell your master that I don't lend out my bellows, but if he comes here, he can use my bellows to his heart's content. That is revenge. What is a grudge? same story, the book. He says, no, I won't, can't lend you a book, you will come up with it. Now he sends for his fellows. He says, certainly, tell your master, here are my bellows, he can use it to his heart's content. I'm not going to say to him, but tell your master this, I'm not going to say to him, you can come here and use my bellows to your heart's content. That's bearing a grudge. That's the difference between bearing a grudge. Now, not allowed even to bear a grudge. Never mind. Not even a grudge. On what is it based? The Silas Yisholim says, if you shall love your neighbor as yourself. No difference. The Toma Devoro, the Moshe Kodavire, works it differently. And he's got a whole thesis. There is a law in the Torah, the Holachto Bidrocho, that we must walk in God's ways. We must emulate God. That's a law in the Torah. Now, how do we know God's ways? There are 13 ways which are described in the Torah. Hashem, Hashem, Keil, Rachum, Mechanun, Erech, Apayim, Bramkez, and Emes. There are 13 attributes that we know God has. So these 13 attributes we must emulate. One of the attributes of God is no say or vote. It's not that he's long-suffering, but no say or vote. He bears the sin of the other one sins and he bears it. So the Toma Devora explains it. He says, just look what God does. Here is a person that is sinning against God. He gives him life. The wherewithal to do this, and he still gives him life. The least he could do, God could do, is I don't give you life. But that's revenge. Can't do that. So he gives him life still. So he said, that is expected of us, to walk in God's way. So that if a person does us wrong, now what happens if he needs something and he's doing wrong? You've got to give it to him. That is the law of the Torah. He needs it. You've got to give it to him. Of course, it doesn't mean that if he needs a firearm, that you've got to give it to him because he was going to shoot you with it. But let us say he's in dire straits. He hasn't got anything to eat. You've got to give it to him. That is what God did. And there was a famous case that happened around about the year 900 when the Slabotki Yeshiva, the students in the Slabotki Yeshiva, half of the students said they don't want to learn Musar. They were learning then a minimum of 16 hours a day. They said to learn Musar for half an hour a day, that means we'll be learning only for 15 and a half hours a day. And if it means we're going to learn for 16 half an hour, then we'd rather learn Gemara for the extra half hour. We don't need Musar. Everything is in the Torah. The Baruch Be'er supported them. Half of them broke away from the yeshiva and made their own yeshiva and got the Baruch Be'er to be the Rosh Yeshiva. The head of the Slabotkel yeshiva, Reb Nota Hirsch, had extra money. He gave them the money. He supported them. They had gone against him, but he supported them. That's the Torah. Of course, the sequel was that 16 years later, the Baruch Be'er was changed completely. Not only did he have his own yeshiva where Musar was a subject, but he considered himself not to be the best person to teach Musar, but in the special person in his yeshiva forms. That was happened afterward when he saw what was how things were developing and he realized that. But that is a law. That is something that is expected of us. Now, the Gemara says, if the early ones were like angels, then we are like human beings. If they were like human beings, then we are like donkeys. And even amongst donkeys, there are donkeys and there are donkeys. there was the famous donkey of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yoyer, who when he came to an inn, wouldn't eat the oats. First he gave him barley, wouldn't eat it, then he gave him wheat, wouldn't gave him oats, and the donkey doesn't eat. Comes to the Pinchas Ben Yoyer, wants to have the donkey's inn, he said, no. He said, we won't eat. He said, what do you give him? Some oats? He said, oats. They're ordinary donkeys. So it's a completely different category. That's what we've got to do. But a completely different category. Now I know how difficult it is for you to understand that. Because today, everything is done to bring down everybody to their very lowest. You read a biography of a person, bringing down to absolutely nothing. A man is president of the United States. They try and make nothing of him. Anyway, they don't manage to do it during his 4 years of office or 8 years of office. After he's out of office, they're still at it. He's already dead. Still at it. Until they bring him down to absolutely nothing. They have a president here, President Wilson. Today they've made absolutely nothing of him. Bring everyone down to absolutely nothing. When they write about David HaMelech, just look what they do with him. Not a question of not only cannot appreciate greatness, cannot tolerate greatness, because it's looked upon as a belittling of oneself. He's greater than I am. And that is why we've got revisionism in history today. The Holocaust never took place. It means that those people, it's our generation, look what we did. No, we would never do a thing like that. Holocaust is not. This is a figment of the imagination of the Jews. It never took place. Difficult for us to understand. But that is the... If we are speaking about absolutely different categories, and we are speaking from one generation to another generation, different categories, how much more so when you go back much further. So I'm telling you this, that we should have a better appreciation of what a novi is, of what a prophet is. But more of this next time, that is only the beginning of the subject. Yes, sir.
I don't mean to belabor your point, but the question that Mary brought up, is it obligated not to hold a grudge against the boy? There is no such obligation to exist. It was just no bad character to do.
There are laws which are not expected from Goy. They haven't got these are things that the complete devotion to the Torah. I mean, Jews haven't got it today. How many Jews have got anything like this today? So this is something that is not expected of Goy. You see, we've got it even amongst ourselves. For example, they tell me that on Saturday night, some people play cards. Is it true? Do you think there's anything wrong in that? What's wrong? And yet, if I had a school of cards, they call it a school of cards, every Saturday night, you wouldn't like. Don't you use that word here.
It's like
a school of whales. Have you ever
heard of cards?
Deck of cards. Must be that because speaking about the people that play cards.
A club. A club to play cards.
A club. You wouldn't like it. If anybody else, another member of our Mechod, it wouldn't matter. What am I different? Yes, you are different. We expect more from you. Why do you expect more from you? You've got the Torah.
you study the Torah, you study much more than we do, you know much more than we do about it, we expect another thing from you. So that is not expected from a non-Jew, it's not expected.
No, I
think
that
was a good question. If a Jew can do it to a non-Jew, fine. But it makes it very difficult. Well, the non-Jew has not got that obligation to the Jew. If the non-Jew practices it, then of course you've got to do it. Then there's no question. There's a special law about that. That if the non-Jew rises to a level of yourself, then you've got to practice it. There's no question about that. But if he doesn't, you know, a friend of mine in Israel, he wrote that sefer, Shabbos Kihil Chosam, beautiful work. His father was fled from Germany in 1938 or 39 to Holland, and the Germans caught up with him there. And most strange occurrences happened, a few strange occurrences then. And this is that I know they told me about, these two things he told me about. The one was when they had finished, there was absolutely nothing to eat in the house at all. And his father was a most remarkable man, a very friendly person. There was nothing to eat anymore. They went to bed that night, no room for nothing, they went to bed and went to study. The next morning, when he opened the front door, there was a bag of potatoes there. Never found out who put it there, what that space. Then one day he's sitting in his study and standing at the door, and then open the door, he walked to German. One has a look about the house, the other one comes to the Rabbi's father and says, "Come along, I'm taking you away." He said, "What are you doing there?" Rabbi Gamora opened. He said, "I'm studying the Torah." He said, "What is the Torah?" He said, "It's the Bible." He said, "What is the Torah that you're studying?" He says that you must love your neighbor as yourself. So he said, "Do you love me as yourself?" He said, "Yes." He said, "You know I'm there. I've come to take you away." He said, "Yes, I know." He said, "And you still say that you love me as yourself?" He said, "Yes. That's what I'm supposed to do." He couldn't take it. Couldn't take it either. There was a response. Not every master would have responded like that. But there was a response, so he was absolutely right. And that he left myself. There we've got the obligation. But there was no obligation to love the first oneself. He doesn't do that asking that, but that's no obligation. So we've got the answer that he says, if a Gentile acts like that, then he's got to act the same way. And there's a special rule about that. As Gentile has done the same, there's no question that if he rises to that, then there's an obligation on you. And the whole circumstance is that the Lord's name is in the equal duty, literally, and there's equal justice that a Gentile will do for you, you don't do for the Gentile. That can't be. And you do such a thing that a Gentile does, and you don't do it, and it's the right thing, can't be. You are under a greater obligation than he is. In the same way as I'm under a greater obligation than Mr. Weinman or Mr. Barth or Mr. Weinberger. So,
Rob, I'm concerned with because sometimes a lot is spoken about the fact that it's certain that there has to be Derek Erb, Cardinal Latour, that we have to have Derek Erb. And I understand that there are certain Jewish people who don't have it and who actually choose in business and steal from their business. So do we treat them the same way as we? Yeah, because they're Jewish, even though they're
bad people. You don't treat them the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But what has to be, love has to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Love has to be there.
Even if they would
treat them the same way, one is very discouraged about it, one doesn't give you the opportunity to teach, but if they are in need, to support them. Constantly done in that way, we've got to support that. That is the law. But the point that I'm making, I'm not giving you a list in any way, the point that I'm making is the level of that is demanded of older people can profit very much more. I just want to give you a level, and from that level we will try and understand. So that is only the beginning of the story. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, I am arranging from now on this a different arrangement. The congregation has been particularly helpful in paying me during this week only from 9, from 8 to 9 in the morning. That's been a tremendous amount. Until now, from now, I just don't get a chance to prepare a shiur. I don't get a chance to learn. The phone is going all the time. If it is a shiur at any time, if the shiur has got to be answered at any time, but there are people who ask me for telephone numbers. And that I can't stand. But you also said telephone number. But I'm trying to do something, and I've got to give up and get the telephone because you've got the telephone number. I can't do that. You are suffering. I've got to have time to study, I've got to have time for my community. Now, please, anything you want to tell me, from 8 to 10 in the morning, and from 5 to 6 in the afternoon, 3 hours a day, telephone communication. From 8 to 10 in the morning, and from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. It might have to be a few minutes before 6, because of Tuesdays and Wednesdays. No, it's only on Tuesdays. Tuesday I do the shiur at 6 o'clock, so I leave at 5 minutes to 6. But Wednesday the shiur is good for 6, so I leave after 6 o'clock. So this Thursday, yeah, Thursday is good. It's a Gemara. Thursday is a Gemara shiur, and the Gemara shiur is so you can watch it only between 5 and half past 5. So, thank you very much, yes.
Can I put another again in asking if the Levitt is going to be giving her annual Elias year on the 20th of August at 8 o'clock, that's Tuesday evening at Mr. and Mrs. Maddow's house, and the title is, Should I Spell It? And Should I Spell It? So there's going to be a flyer coming out, Mr. Shemek, change for $1. But just in case, right on time.
And on August the 8th, that is tomorrow a week, there is the annual Yantipur Kotel service at the shul, commencing at 4:15. That is to introduce the month of April.
The rabbi is on the program.
I'm going to do that.
And Mr. Turner had so many methods that when he was working on self-worth, I don't know what it was, but he said to contact me with that. My donation goes to you afterwards. He walked up to Shimon. I didn't call him either. I said, yeah. He walked up to Shimon and said, yeah, but what I was working on didn't work out. And so I'm sorry that it's taken me so long, and my wife and I will be giving her a check. And so anyway, the check from us, and it was a small, but it was down.